We're going to be continuing our study in Genesis this evening. We've made it to Genesis chapter 35. So we're going to be covering chapter 35 and 36 this evening. So chapter 35 covers Jacob returning home, and then the chapter ends with the death and burial of Isaac. So we're going to, as we go along this evening, we're going to read a couple of verses and then discuss and then move on to the next group of verses. So starting with verses 1 through 4, read about God commanding Jacob to return home. So starting in verse 1, God said to Jacob, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there. Make an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau." So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, "Put away the foreign gods that are among you, and purify yourselves, and change your garments. Then let us arise and go up to Bethel, so that I may make there an altar to the gods who answers me in the day of my distress, and has been with me wherever I have gone." So they gave to Jacob all the foreign gods that they had, and the rings that were in their ears. Jacob hid them under the terebinth tree that was near Shechem. So first of all, God gives Jacob a command. He's to return to Bethel. Now, what's the significance of Bethel? Okay, yep, this is where Jacob had his dream. And what else other than just having a dream? What was revealed to him in this dream? Okay. If so, God essentially he made his promise to Jacob here. But what about Jacob? What did Jacob do other than dream in Bethel? What did he decide on his relationship to God? Well, that's what he's going to do this time when he returns. But back in chapter 28, what did he decide on how his relationship with God was going to be?
He would follow God. That's what I meant when I said he pledged himself to God.
Okay.
He would begin to follow God, and God met his basic needs, which God did. And then he took the stone that he had slept on and erected it as a pillar and anointed it to mark his commitment.
Okay. So yeah, sorry, I missed the part where you said pledge. So yep. So Rose's covered it all there. So that's what I was getting at. So this is where, as far as Jacob and his relationship to God, it's really where it all starts. In the last several chapters, we've seen Jacob's relationship with God grow, and we've seen God fulfill what He had promised Jacob He would do, and. Okay. Yep. Good point. Yep. So yeah, a tenth of all of his possessions would go to God. And Jacob said that God would be his God if he was taken care of and watched after, and that's what's happened so far, and what we've read about Jacob up to this point. All right. And verse 2. So Jacob commands his household and to all who are with him to rid themselves of the foreign gods, purify themselves, change their garments. So aside from just the people in his family, there were other people than just his wives and his children that were in Jacob's camp. So he would have had servants that we know he sent servants to Esau to go before him and to send the droves of animals. And also in chapter 34, we read about Jacob's sons plundering the city of Shechem, and the women and children were plundered or captured and or sold off into slavery after the men were all killed. So there's lots of people now traveling with Jacob. So we know that Rachel took the idols from Laban when they left Padan Aram. So that could be a source of some of these idols that Jacob is telling them to put away. But it seems like this is more of a widespread event going on within Jacob's group, within his household. So it's not just Rachel. This is numerous people traveling with him would have had these idols. So I mentioned the people that had been plundered or taken captive out of the city of Shechem, because they certainly would have been idolatrous people worshiping various gods. So that could be another source from some of these idol worshipers. But at any rate, Jacob tells them, you're going to give those to me, essentially saying here, you're done with all that. My household, we're going to worship God, because this is what Jacob had vowed to do, that if God protected him, God looked after him, then Jehovah was going to be his God. And so in the part about purifying themselves, he's not just telling them, you need to go take a bath. The word that's used here for purify, it can mean a physical cleansing, but it also is used likewise to talk about a moral cleansing. So they were to make themselves moral or make themselves holy so that they could be ready to serve God when they get to Bethel. All right, verse 3, Jacob is going to make an altar when he arrives to Bethel. He said, because God has answered him when in distress and been with him. And so if we go back to Genesis chapter 28, verses 18 through 22, this is Jacob vowing himself to worship God and for God to be his God. And going back to chapter 28, I've got the passage on the chart here. So early in the morning, Jacob took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. He called the name of that place Bethel. But the name of the city was Luz at the time, or at first. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will give a full tenth to you. So in verse 21 he says, so that I may come again to my father's house in peace. That's what's going to happen here in chapter 35. So the people give Jacob their idols and their earrings. It's interesting of the part about them giving him their earrings. We did some research on that, tried to understand why was that. Found some writers that said that these earrings may have been associated with various false gods, so they may have images or inscriptions on them that would have had something to do with other deities other than Jehovah. We read also in the book of Exodus, what did the Israelites do with their earrings? Yeah, so they made an idol out of it. They made the golden calf. So it could be that Jacob is just taking away some of the mediums they might try to use later on to make more idols after he takes these away. And to me, that seems like more of a plausible explanation, but there could certainly be multiple explanations there. Yes? Mm-hmm.
And the Israelites played harlot in times past. So, you know, by that association, you can say that jewelry represents them being loose and following other idols. So, to, you know, adorn themselves, like idol worship. So,
yeah, it could. And I'd read some references to that. But when the people, they leave Egypt, what do they take with them? They take all this jewelry with them. And they're supposed to. That's kind of like their payment for having been there in slavery, so that way they carry some wealth with them as they leave and go on their own way. But that certainly that could be an explanation. But in a way, to me, that makes it seem like jewelry is a wicked thing or a bad thing in and of itself. And I don't think it is necessarily, but it certainly has something to do with idol worship or false gods. There's a reason that Jacob has them give it to him and buries it so they don't have it anymore. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that?
They also were told not to mark bodies and all like that, a tattoo. You know, because not only, I think you can only suffer because of the earrings, because the marking, signifying of them being a group,
Yeah, so what you're saying is it could have some kind of jewelry that's identifying them maybe as a group that's a worshiper of this God, or they belong to this nation, or belong to this. Yeah, that's plausible as well. I didn't think about that. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so it could have had some meaning with how they wore it. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that certainly could have been one of the reasons that he wanted them to give that up.
The jewelry in itself must have had some positive purpose too, though, because Abraham's servant, when he found Rebecca, gave her a nose ring and braces for her wrist. So there was this exchange of jewelry in which he was chosen to be the bride.
Yep.
So it's not all negative, I guess.
Right. Yeah, so it's interesting that that's mentioned, and it doesn't tell it. So we don't read exactly why in the scriptures, but I think we can be certain that there was a reason for Jacob to do this, not just arbitrarily. I don't like your earrings, so we're going to bury them. Certainly was a reason for that, and it had something to do with them turning away from their idol worship and worshiping Jehovah. Yeah, good point. Yep, and I think Jacob is, in a way, it's marking that who they're going to be worshiping now, who is their sovereign going to be, and also in a way they're going to worship God here in Bethel, and I think that they're preparing themselves to present themselves before God in a way, similar to the way the Israelites did before they went to Mount Sinai. So the next passage is verses 5 through 8. It says in verse 5, "And as they journeyed, a terror from God fell upon the cities that were around them, so they did not pursue the sons of Jacob." Now, why would people pursue the sons of Jacob? So God is certainly looking out for Jacob and his family. Now what is he protecting them from? Okay. Okay. Now what happened in chapter 34?
It goes back to what Simeon and Levi did.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. So what do they do? Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, and so Jacob would have had a. Did you have your hand up, Pax? Go ahead.
Thank you.
Yep, good points. Yeah, and so we understand that God is protecting Jacob here from the nations. And like Pax mentioned, we often think about it, we understand that there's Jacob and there's his sons, and yeah, they probably got, there's some people helping watch the livestock, but there's, Jacob's got lots of men. He does have people working for him that could potentially protect him. But we were, like we read about in chapter 34, after the men of Shechem are slain, it seems like Jacob is fearful for his family and for his people because of what they've done. So it seems that surrounding nations or city states, they could easily, you know, fall upon Jacob and just wipe them out. And certainly as wealthy as Jacob was at this time, there was a lot to it that could be gained by someone that was willing to do that. So I think the point here in verse 5 that God protecting Jacob, it wasn't necessarily they were naturally afraid of him, because I don't think his numbers would have been great enough to overcome, especially, you know, if multiple kings aligned themselves and attacked him as they saw him as a threat for eliminating all the men of Shechem. But it was something that God did, and God working on these nations to make them afraid so that they would not take out what would be otherwise an easy target in Jacob. Yep, sure. I mean, and yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you, but think about Abram when they went to rescue Lot. When did they go rescue Lot? They went at night, didn't they? It's because they kind of had to use tactics. So for someone to confront them in the day, they could certainly be, you know, wiped out. But Abraham, you know, was smart and had God on his side, so he was able to overcome what could potentially be greater numbers. The point I just wanted to make here was that it was, I think we need to understand that it was God doing something on Jacob's behalf here. Although, like Kenny said, God has worked multiple times within his family and blessed them. So I think that there was certainly a reputation for the family of Jacob and Isaac and Abraham for the things that God had done for them. And I think that's worth mentioning as well. So that's a good point. So verse 6, they come to Luz, which is the actual city's name of that Jacob calls Bethel. And so it's easy to get confused with all these names there in chapter 35. We're talking about the same place. So verse 6, they come to Luz, which says that is Bethel in the land of Canaan. Let's see. Oh, I didn't read verse 6 and 7 yet. Let me back up a step and read the rest of this passage. So verse 6, and Jacob came to Luz, that is Bethel, which is in the land of Canaan, he and all the people who were with him. And there he built an altar and called the place El Bethel, because God had revealed himself to him when he fled from his brother. And Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried under an oak below Bethel. So he called its name Alon Bakuth. So verse 7, Jacob builds this altar, and now he calls this area El Bethel, which means God of the house of God. So Bethel was the house of God. And El Bethel means God of the house of God. In verse 8, there's a kind of a peculiar reference here with Deborah, who was Rebekah's nurse. It says in verse 8 that she died, and that word, it literally means had died. So it's probably not that they got there, and as soon as they got there, she died. But she had probably died previous to this, and they had carried her body with them as they traveled. And they buried her beneath the tree at Bethel. Now, this is the only reference we have to Deborah in name. And when Rebekah leaves to marry Isaac, it says that her nurse went with her. But this is the only time that Deborah is mentioned by name in the scriptures. So just an interesting reference. And it's also interesting that we don't read about her other than coming with Rebekah and here when she dies. So somehow, at some point, she is no longer with Isaac and Rebekah, and she's amongst Jacob and his family. And we know that she didn't travel with Jacob when he went to Laban. So it's interesting. Somehow she got to be with Jacob's family. And we don't know exactly how that is. This next group of verses, 9 through 15, God's going to renew his covenant with Jacob. It says in verse 9, God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Padan Aram and blessed him and said to him, your name is Jacob. No longer shall your name be called Jacob, but Israel shall be your name. So he called his name Israel. And God said to him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you, and kings shall come from your own body. Verse 12, the land that I gave to Abraham and Isaac I will give to you, and I will give the land to your offspring after you. Then God went up from him in the place where he had spoken with him. And Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he had spoken with him, a pillar of stone. He poured out a drink offering on it and poured oil on it. So Jacob called the name of the place where God had spoken with him, Bethel. So this is verse 9, God appearing to Jacob again. In verse 10, once again, God tells Jacob that his name is going to be Israel. And why was his name Israel? Who remembers why that name is or what it means? Okay. He had striven with God, is what that name means. And verses 11 and 12, God repeats his promises to Jacob. And this is the eighth time that this promise has been made in Genesis, starting with Abraham and now going to Jacob. Verse 14, Jacob erects another pillar. This seems to be a favorite way of Jacob to make a monument to special occasions dealing with God and dealing with his life and in reverence and relationship to God. And he pours out a drink offering and oil upon the pillar to anoint it. And another just interesting point to make is that in verse 13 it says, then God went up from him in the place where he had spoken with him. We don't read about that happening a whole lot, but it's essentially God ascending back up into heaven. Is what we're reading about in verse 13, and God returning to his abode. Just an interesting reference that it's made in that verse that we don't read about very often.
It's also interesting to me that God identified himself as God Almighty, which is El Shaddai.
Oh, yep. Yeah, exactly. That's
it.
Yeah.
I think, if I remember correctly, that was when he had identified himself to Abraham also.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see the different terms and phrases that are used throughout the study we've had so far. But this one's pretty powerful.
Yeah, thanks, Rose. That is a good point. So he's not just saying, I am Jehovah. This is a different name that's used, like Rose pointed out. El Shaddai, it's a different Hebrew word. And God referring to himself in a slightly different way than he has previously. Yes. Yeah, good point. Good point to bring that up. So verses 16 through 22, this is going to be discussing the death of Rachel and the birth of Benjamin. Verse 16, then they journeyed from Bethel when they were still some distance from Ephrath. Rachel went into labor, and she had hard labor. And when her labor was at its hardest, the midwife said to her, do not fear, for you have another son. And as her soul was departing, for she was dying, she called the name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died, and she was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. And Jacob set up a pillar over her tomb. It is the pillar of Rachel's tomb, which is there to this day. Israel journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder, where Israel lived in that land. Oh, let me stop right there in verse 21. And I'll come back to that. So Rachel's going to labor, and she has a son. And before she dies, or as she's dying, she names him Ben-Oni, which means son of my sorrow or son of my pain. So it kind of makes sense that Jacob would want to rename his son, or at least call him something different, and calls him Benjamin, which means son of the right hand. Son of the right hand, you would think of that as being maybe a name for a firstborn, someone that's going to be the heir of the father. But in this case, it's Benjamin, and he's the youngest of all of Jacob's sons. Which brings us to, well, I'll come to that in a second. So Rachel, she dies, and she's buried on the way to Ephrath, and Jacob erects this pillar. So Rachel is not buried in the cave that Abraham purchases back in Genesis chapter 23. Jacob will eventually be buried there with Leah, but Rachel is not moved out of her grave and brought to that cave. Okay, verse 21. Israel journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. And verse 22, while Israel lived in that land, Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard of it. Now the sons of Jacob were 12. Okay, so Reuben lays with Bilhah. Why would Reuben do this? Does anybody want to take a stab at that, or have you considered that? Who recalls the story of Absalom? And one of the things that Absalom does after David flees the city is that he goes into David's harem, and he erects a tent up so that all the people of Israel can see that the harem of David now belongs to Absalom. So, and this was a practice as a new king or a usurper would come in, or the son of a king, they would go into the harem, and that is a way of saying, I am now the king. So similarly, Reuben is going into Bilhah here, who is Jacob's concubine. She's a servant. She's not a wife like Rachel and Leah. So what's probably happening here is Reuben is saying, I am the heir to Jacob. And we just had Benjamin born in the previous verses, where Benjamin is named son of the right hand. So Benjamin, through his name, is kind of getting a special title. It could be that Reuben kind of feels threatened by that and wants to make sure that it's understood he is the one that will be the heir of Jacob. And so he goes in to take his concubine to show that. Now, that's all supposition, because we don't read that answer in the scriptures. But I think by reading the context and some other things that we know about customs at the time, that we can come to that conclusion and feel okay about it.
But this choice has implications when we get to chapter
49. Yep. So at Jacob's death, Reuben is going to be cursed because of this. And it's kind of like, so Jacob, well, we'll see when we get there, but Jacob is kind of on his deathbed giving his blessings. And he's not giving all good news as he dies, and we'll see that when we get there. But this is one of the things that he calls out, that he doesn't have good things to say about Reuben, and reminds him of what he had done, and he's cursed because he doesn't get a blessing at the end. Yes. Yep, and so that's what I was saying, that so he's saying he's the heir, so he'd go into the concubine to make sure that it's clear who the heir is, and it's not Benjamin, the son of the right hand. So I put this map up here just to show, a little cursor didn't show up, just to show some of Jacob's travels. So this is Shechem, where the red star is. So that's where Simeon and Levi, they kill all the men of the city. And then Jacob's told to come, go to Bethel, where he sets up an altar. And then somewhere around, it says Ephrath, which is Bethlehem, somewhere in the areas where Rachel dies here and where she's buried. And then Jacob's going to continue down to where Isaac is, and Mamre. And the name becomes Hebron later on. But that's where Jacob is headed, and that's where he's come from. So verses 23 through 25, read about Jacob's sons, and I've got them all listed here, and who their mothers were. So you can see that Leah had the most children. And then the other, Rachel had two, and Bilhah and Zilpah had two each. Verses 27 through 29, we read about the death of Isaac. And so verse 27, and Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre, or Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had sojourned. You can remember back to when Abraham entertains God and the angels that he is at Mamre at that time. And it says in verse 28, now the days of Isaac were 180 years, and Isaac breathed his last, and he died and was gathered to his people, old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. So Esau at some point travels to meet Jacob or returns home with Jacob, and they were able to bury Isaac together. So that concludes chapter 35. We're going to go through 36 pretty quick because there's not a lot here other than it talks about some of the kings and descendants of Edom. And we'll try to get through as much as we can here. So chapter 36, verses 1 through 8. It says, Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock. These are the generations of Esau in verse 1. Esau took his wives from the Canaanites, Adah, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, Aholibama, the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Zibion, the Hivite, and Basemath, Ishmael's daughter, the sister of Nebaioth, and Adah bore to Esau, Eliphaz. Basemath bore Reuel, and Aholibama bore Jeush, Jalam, and Korah. These are the sons of Esau who were born to him in the land of Canaan. So just to get the context here, remember Esau had married two Canaanite women that grieved his parents. And so to try to make up for that, he goes and marries Ishmael's daughter. So he's got these three wives. And verse 6, Esau took his wives, his sons, his daughters, and all the members of his household, his livestock, all his beasts, and all his property that he had acquired in the land of Canaan. He went into a land away from his brother Jacob, for their possessions were too great for them to dwell together. The land of their sojournings could not support them because of their livestock. So Esau settled in the hill country of Seir. Esau is Edom. So verse 7 says that the land could not support both their vast herds. So they've just got so much wealth, they've got so many animals, similar situation to Lot and Abraham, that the land couldn't support both of them. Of course, Lot and Abraham, their servants, couldn't get along. But in this case, the land can't support both of them. But on top of that, who is the land to belong to? Right. So the land's going to belong to Jacob and his descendants. So it makes sense for Esau to leave, in addition to just the fact that, the land can't support both of their vast amounts of livestock. So Esau goes and dwells in Mount Seir. So this is a map of where that's located. This is the land of Edom, and here's Israel there, just as a point of reference. All right, so the chiefs of Edom, verses 15 through 19, it says, these are the chiefs of the sons of Esau, the sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn of Esau, the chiefs, Teman, Omar, Zepho, Kenaz, Korah, Gadam, and Amalek. These are the chiefs of Eliphaz in the land of Edom. These are the sons of Adah. So you won't find a lot of information about really any of these names other than Amalek. And Amalek will become a nation, and they will be a people that wars with Israel later on. But the rest of these names are really just in context here of chapter 36.
These nations under Edom will all eventually turn away from God, but again, Jacob will turn away from God too.
Yep, so, yeah, and that's a good point. I'm going to skip down to just to finish this up, because really we talk about here some of these men are going to be designated chiefs. There's some that are going to be kings, and after they have kings, they have chiefs again. So it seems like at some point they have kings. And chapter 36 points out that Edom has kings before Israel has kings. Trying to find a name in here, and I'm not finding it to illustrate a point. Now, someone tell me if you see that name or what verse it's in. But one of the men's name has the name Baal as his name. And I didn't write down what verse it's in. Okay, thank you. Verse 39. Baal Hanan, the son of Archbor, died. So, talking about these men are wicked, they go as far to have Baal as part of their name. So we certainly understand that these are not a godly people, what results in Edom and coming from Esau. So that'll conclude chapter 36, and we'll pick up 37 on Sunday.